Welcome to another episode of the Women in STEM Plus podcast. Today we will be interviewing Emma Joyce Steele, a member of the Stanford OHS Women in STEM Plus Club. She is the Women in STEM Plus member spotlight for the month of June. Women in STEM Plus is a nonprofit organization dedicated to empowering women in all STEM Plus fields. Our names are April and Amelia, and we are Women in STEM Plus ambassadors. We'll be your hosts for today. Let's get started. So, Emma, what do you do specifically in the STEM field?
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Emma. I'm a graduating senior at the OHS. And in the STEM field, I mostly tutor. I taught a sixth grade and a 10th grade life science course to some kids in a Philippine school. And apart from that, I'm a tutor here at the OHS for AP Chem. And that's mostly what I do in relation to like the STEM field.
That sounds great. Have you ever experienced any form of like sexism or misogyny in the STEM field or like in your tutoring sessions or just any other field in general?
Yeah, so luckily I haven't actually experienced forms of misogyny or not anything that I remember. I think if it ever happened, I just like said that the person was probably just being ignorant or something. I didn't really take it personally, so I don't really remember anything. But I have experienced certain forms of discrimination more related to my ethnicity because I'm Hispanic. And I used to go to school in Colombia, and I was in one of the advanced math classes. And there was an American guy there, and he actually told me that I was not like the other Colombians because I was actually smart, which was not a great thing to say. Definitely a really bad stereotype that Hispanic people, I don't know, are not like scientific or something, which, yeah, it wasn't a great experience. Apart from that, I've just gotten comments like, oh, you know, your scores are good for a Hispanic or things like that, which is really weird that people would say things like that. But I try to just ignore it and just know that like, it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah. I've had quite a few experiences with that as well. Like, people often assume that like Asians as a stereotype are good at math. So I do kind of relate to what you're saying. So Emma, who are the top three most influential people to you?
So actually, in terms of science specifically, and also literature, because I love writing, I would have to say Mary Somerville. She was this scientist. She's one of the first women to actually be accepted to the Royal Science Academy. And so I've always been inspired by her work because she always tried to simplify scientific concepts so that more people could understand them, which I think is a really nice thing to do. And also, one of my idols is Mary Shelley. She wrote Frankenstein. And I think she's just iconic because Frankenstein is a really good story because of multiple reasons. Yeah, she's the best. I think her mom was Mary Wollstonecraft, so it's just very iconic. And then I also really look up to Frances Arnold. I want to be a chemical engineer. And Frances Arnold, I think in 2018, won the Nobel Chemistry Prize for directed enzyme evolution. And I think that's really cool. It's definitely something that I want to eventually like work on in the future. So definitely a woman in science that I look up to.
Perfect. Thank you for sharing. As you mentioned before, you're a senior. So what are your plans after your senior year? Like what college? What do you plan to do?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to UPenn, the engineering school, and I plan to study chemical engineering and maybe pick up another major in comparative literature. As I said, I really like literature and writing, and at UPenn, you can really explore both of them. They let you double major, so I thought that was really cool. And within chemical engineering, I'm hoping to have a concentration in pharmaceuticals and biotechnology because I really want to go into that kind of work in the future. So hopefully I can, I mean, looking really far into the future, do some sort of like master's program related to that and eventually work at a lab or at a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, that sounds great. So we know that you do a lot of work with gender and sexuality. And I know that you're one of the founders or co-founders of the GSA at OHS. So how do you think STEM kind of overlaps with what you do in the GSA club?
So yeah, I'm the president of the GSA, and I think there's a very interesting divide between the sciences and the LGBTQ community, because you don't really see a lot of LGBTQ people in science. Like, it's, they're not very vocal about it, or at least it doesn't come as easily. Like, for example, Alan Turing definitely was a gay man in science, but there's not many role models that are spoken about. So I feel like there's always been this kind of divide, especially because a lot of people use things like biology to justify being homophobic or transphobic, when if you really look into it, those arguments don't really stand. So I feel like going into science and just being like a role model for LGBTQ people in science is really important. And also there's this club in a lot of universities that, you know, if you're interested in it, it's called OSTEM, and basically it's like out in STEM. So it's a club for LGBTQ people in the STEM field so that they can really be like represented. And so you understand that, you know, anyone can be a scientist, not just what people like traditionally assume a scientist would look like.
Great. So Emma, how do you hope your work in the STEM field will influence other girls / women?
So I know a lot of discrimination still exists within STEM, mostly because a lot of girls don't think that they could go into those fields. And so I hope that at least by being like a vocal advocate of it, more girls will feel represented and like the fields are not, you know, too masculine or anything like that. Because I really think like STEM has a place for everyone. You just need to, you know, have role models so you feel like you belong. And one of my dreams is to actually win a Nobel Prize. And as it turns out, I'm Colombian and Argentinian, and no woman has ever won a Nobel Prize in either of those countries. So I really do hope I can be the first or one of the first. So anyone in Colombia or Argentina feels, you know, more incentivized to go into science and seek those kinds of opportunities in the future.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. In terms of like winning the Nobel Prize, what do you think that means for kind of girls, Colombian or Argentinian, or just women in general? What do you think that's going to, no, show them?
So I think initially, like, winning a Nobel Prize just means that you're doing a lot of groundbreaking research in your field, which is just important to have role models that are actually like changing the lives of everyone, because the research that gets you a Nobel Prize is usually like, again, groundbreaking. And I think particularly for Colombia and Argentina, they don't have a lot of Nobel Prizes. Colombia has 2 and Argentina has 5. I think that just means like, you know, it's more about innovation and development. So I hope that by actually like winning one of those prizes, I can incentivize that a little bit more in my countries, because I feel like definitely scientific research is lacking. And I don't think it's necessarily like, you know, particular to those countries. It's more like there needs to be more interest, because sometimes like a lot of people don't understand what's going on with science, or some of the like research projects or things like that are kind of confusing. So I feel like it's really important to get the, you know, the public interested in it so that you actually get funding and so that you actually bring innovation and development along with it, which, you know, winning a Nobel Prize kind of says that, or I hope it does. I think that's how it would help people out. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I totally agree. And I think just some people are, you know, like afraid to kind of venture in the STEM field because of what, you know, people might say to them. So kind of in relations to winning the Nobel Prize, like what project or work would you like to do in the future with regards to kind of chemical engineering?
Yeah, I mentioned that I want to do a concentration in pharmaceuticals, so I want to expand a little bit on that. I think there's a lot of work that can still be done in the medical field to bring, you know, equal healthcare to everybody. But I mean, obviously part of it depends upon, you know, politics and things like that. But another part of it is just like scientists directly. So, you know, doing the right kinds of research, making processes faster. For example, with what Francis Arnold discovered, which was directed enzyme evolution, it's a way of actually like reducing costs of production a lot. And so if you're able to make the product like more affordable, you can actually give it to more people, which is great. And I think that's the kind of things that I want to focus on in the future, just like making it more accessible to people and not, you know, only if you have a certain amount of wealth can you, you know, live healthy or have a long like life expectancy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of it is like when people have a certain illness and they need a certain medicine for it, they're like hesitant to even go to the doctor because they're afraid of like the costs that will come with it. So yeah.
Right, April. And I think another community that we see not have equal access to medicine is women. And that actually comes in the way of how medicine in terms of like women's health is researched. So for example, there's not a lot of research about like women's like reproductive health, and it's very lacking because again it all comes down to the funding and which research people are willing to fund. And sometimes in terms of pharmaceuticals, the products that they discover, it's mostly like in terms of aesthetical stuff or like, you know, things to enhance people's beauty or things like that. And then that happens to also work with a certain illness. But there's very little funding for issues that directly affect certain communities. And I think that's a problem. If you also see like a lot of older studies that were done in certain illnesses, most of the research subjects are men. And so the application in women is very different, and it's not been looked into. Even though, you know, there's very clear differences in terms of how certain illnesses affect different people. So I think definitely it's important to keep in mind diversity when you're doing STEM work, even though you might not think about it. You might just be like, okay, well, it's just science. Like, what does this have to do with it? But in terms of things like that, like which communities is this going to help? Am I leaving anyone out? Those are questions that you need to be able to ask, and you can't really do it if you don't think about those kinds of things on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So you talk about how you're doing chemical engineering and comparative literature at UPenn, and I think that's really amazing. I personally also want to do comparative literature, but I think something that I've learned is that kind of pairing a STEM major maybe with the humanities is something that's very unconventional. So kind of like, why would you want to do that? Like what prompted you to do both topics in college?
Yeah, so comparative literature, I was I mean, first of all, I just really like literature, I have to admit that. But also, I think they pair really nicely because comparative literature gives you a way of being critical about assessing certain like contexts and situations that I think is helpful for a chemical engineer. I view both as like very similar in terms of the kind of like mindset that you need to have, because the goal of being an engineer is to solve problems effectively. And the goal of a, you know, comparative literature person, I guess, is to figure out what those problems are and have critical thinking about them. And I think pairing them works really well. I also think when I was learning about, so I did a summer program on chemical engineering with Stanford, and I learned more about like drug delivery and pharmaceutical processes. And something that was really interesting was a discussion about public health and how, for example, systemic racism affects public health. And if you don't have those skills of being able to look at like a cultural context and understand the social aspects of it, you know, you can do all the science you want, but how helpful is it gonna be if you can if you can't identify which groups you need to help or how you can help those groups? So I think they pair nicely because you need to, again, understand the social context in order to be able to apply the scientific solutions to them.
Right, and I totally agree. And now that you've explained it more, like, I can see kind of the connection between that. So kind of in connection to the comparative literature, Emma, would you like to discuss kind of your work with the Lit Club at OHS?
Yeah, so in the Lit Club, I was last semester the head managing editor of the literary journal, which is called the Chrysalis. So what we do is basically curate a journal for the semester of literary works of everyone in school, not just literary works, but also artwork. And my reason for being interested in that is that it really gives a voice to people, which again, I think is really important, because if you don't know what problems people are facing or how they're feeling about them, then it's really hard to work on them. So I really like my work with it just because our chrysalis is not selective. So we take anyone's work, and I think that's a really nice philosophy that we have, since we don't, you know, choose between people. There's other clubs at the OHS who publish work that's more like curated, but personally we don't like to do that. We like to just see how everyone is feeling, what everyone's thinking, since literature can be very therapeutic to some people. And then based on that, you know, we choose a theme, we choose a title, and then we share it actually with the competition. It's a national competition in based on the US. And then they tell us, you know, how our journal is doing, whether they think we have diverse enough pieces of work. And I think it's really nice just to have that as an outlet for people, because OHS can be very stressful, and having the journal, you know, makes you feel more of a sense of community and more connected to your classmates. So I really like that, doing that.
So, so Emma, we're just wondering, being either 18 or 17, what is like your biggest failure that you faced, and what did you learn from it? Just like passing down some wisdom to the listeners out there who might, you know, want to do the same career that you're thinking of.
So for this, I need to explain a little bit more about my educational career, I guess I'll call it. I actually started at a school in Colombia, and then I, at the end of my sophomore year, I went to the U.S. to a boarding school for a year, and then after that, I ended up in OHS. So in total, I've done 5 years of high school, which I think a lot of people would see as a failure. That's because OHS mandates that you do 2 years. So I couldn't just do like my senior year. I had to do it too. And they call it like a split senior year. But yeah, I think jumping from place to place could be seen as a failure in a sense. I don't really like to see it like that. But it's really taught me that, you know, so, okay, let me see how I can phrase this. Everything is experiences. The reason I left my boarding school is because, you know, at a certain point, like, you can try as hard as you want to fit in somewhere and to try to enjoy your time there. But at a certain point, you have to realize when it's not worth it to keep fighting for that and when it's better to find a better place for you. So I didn't really like my boarding school. I didn't enjoy that experience that much, but it was a valuable experience. And I feel like from that, you know, women in STEM okay, women are underrepresented in STEM, right? And so sometimes you can feel like, you know, you don't fit in somewhere or it's not the place for you. And I would say instead of giving up, try to find something else that fits more with who you are. Because I think there's a lot of options out there and you can really be doing whatever you want to do. I'm guarantee you can find something for you, but it's just about like finding the right fit. So that would be my main advice from that experience. It's don't give up, just keep looking because the right place for you is out there and you don't have to give up your, you know, wants and dreams in the process. There's always a place for you somewhere.
Right. And I agree. I think like I totally agree with what you just said. And I think like, you know, moving from different schools, I think you're just getting more experience like to the world. So kind of as a concluding question, Emma, do you have any advice for women or girls who want to go in the STEM field, or as a senior, any advice for high schoolers or middle schoolers?
Yes, so I think it's really important to learn how to be kind to yourself, because especially STEM is a really hard field, but that should not be discouraging as long as you approach it with a growth mindset and you know that, you know, if you're making mistakes, you can change them, you can improve them. There's always room for growth. No one is not smart enough to go into STEM. Like, anyone can go into it if you like it or if you want to. It's really not, you know, there's no like gates to pass or a certain level of intelligence that you need to have. That's not true. And I would say, yeah, try to enjoy your time and really do things that you like, because you're not going to want to sit there 5 years in the future, look back and be like, wow, I really did not like doing that. Why did I do it? So I would say, yeah, like try to find things that are meaningful to you and do them. And for women in STEM in particular, I would say there's a lot of perceived discrimination that might be a reason for you to turn away. You know, you might think, oh no, there's a lot of guys in this field, so I don't think I want to do that. But actually, the work that's being done by women and by other people to increase representation in STEM is having effects. So a lot of people are being more understanding about the situation and actually internalizing kind of like diversity. So I would say don't think that there's too much discrimination in the field. Obviously, there's a lot of other women and non-binary people and just all kinds of people in STEM that are, you know, welcoming and accepting. And I don't think you should be discouraged just because there's a lot of guys in the field. You know, there's always a place for you somewhere. And if not, you can make that place for yourself. I know that there's a lot of like talented people out there and in this school. And yeah, I think if you really want to do it and if you really want to make a place for yourself, you can do it and you will definitely find people there to support you.
Wow, that's so inspiring. Thank you so much for your advice. And thank you so much for talking to us today about your work in STEM plus fields. Thank you for listening, everyone, and stay tuned for more episodes of the Women in STEM Plus podcast.